auch eine andere Stimme gibt im Äther.
Radio Lora auf 97,5 MHz.
Garantiert anders.
Ayo, eine Kikinix Upper Weekend. The only Filipino radio in Zurich. 97.5. Radio Lora.
Mga kababayan!
Mga kababayan ko, dapat lang malaman nyo, bilib ako sa kulay ko, ako ay Pilipino. Kung may itim o may puti, meron namang kayo manghi, isipin mo na kaya mong abuti ang iyong minimiti.
American Jam.
Ang ating kamay, mga preso ng sekreto, wag mali sa saysay. So not myself as I should be, less of self, more selfishly depressed. I should sell myself to shelves, but there's discrepancy. Identity that's meant to be and colonized mind of me. Lying in her eyes, hope we find ourselves as enemy. Taught to use papaya soap like whiteness is the antidote. Cotton colonized approach can fight this like I'm at the throat. Question it, you start to choke unless you lessen hack your soul. Pressing closest, flatten nose, is told it's best if I'm gonna bestify your race, the brown color of the country's ground, color of the roots of sky beneath the lands of Mindanao. People power sequel, cause this be the people's hours. So we need to see it now, where we can see what's really ours. This is for the place of my mother's land, where I got my face in these finer hands. I used to be ashamed, now I understand, cause this is who I am. I said it's who I am. I said this is for the place of my mother's land, where I got my face in these finer hands. I used to be ashamed, now I understand, cause this is who I am. I said it's who I am. I said colonized, mind blindfolded, so I'm hypnotized, compromised, pride, blind hands never reach the skies, modified eyes, pride, true is failed to recognize, the disguise lies, right view is planted in our minds, calling me a dog eater, praying on some chicken bones, nation over sex force, border rights, failed to homes, all of that is nonsense, they've never felt the misery, they've never seen my province or know my country's history, the blister of evolution, greed, spinning you as colony, planted all this fallacy, corruption and mentality, markets with regime and so no privacy for families, people power used to heed the government monopoly, the poverty, the terraces, improvement from economy, cause human inequality, cause right is what you ought to be, the native tongue I try to speak is silenced by the mastery of English that I'm forced to keep to take the fire outside of me, this is for the place of my mother's land, where I got my face in these finer hands. I used to be ashamed, now I understand, cause this is who I am. I said it's who I am. I said this is for the place of my mother's land, where I got my face in these finer hands. I used to be ashamed, now I understand, cause this is who I am. I said it's who I am. I said Wulasan said America's in the heart, but my blood is full of peace, it keeps it pumping in the dark, so people wake up so we can learn about the issues, those we never learned in school and missed in use, those we never find in books, so it's a missed tool, never learned to hold up a fist, our mind's the pistol, defined by your line in my mind called the hyphen, so over time I'm trying to find the right height when trying to reach a sky, but I fight from being boxed in, wanna reach the God, but my color is the toxin, cultures counteract, keep me back, it's a caution of history and facts from my past, so I'm tossed in, stuck between America and Philippines though, so I know that I'm broke, so I struggle with the stroke, if I'm Filipino now with a flat nose, makes me Filipino then, but with my eyes closed,
Filipino ako sa dugo, Filipino ako sa loob, Filipino ako sa gawa, Filipino sa mga mata, kumising na.
Magandang gabi. You just heard a song from Ruby Ibarra, Who I Am. Last May 21st, Studio Filipino organized for the first time a symposium on topics about the Philippines, entitled The Philippines in the World 2022 Symposium. Three resource persons were invited to speak before an audience of around 40 participants. The symposium covered topics given by Dr. Danica Salazar, Dr. Cristina Martinez Juan, and Stephanie Willi, as well as an art and music performances by Anna Wicket and Stella Cruz. Studio Filipino is a Switzerland-based platform created by three independent contributors whose vision is to activate nuanced discourses on matters pertaining to the Philippines. It aims to provide an innovative approach to the intercultural experience, enabling exchanges that provide a better understanding of our differences while exploring our shared humanity. Studio Filipino aspires to strengthen and expand its network, connecting anyone who seeks to deepen their knowledge and understanding of the various notions and expressions about the Philippines. Here with us today is our very own Stephanie Willi from the ETH, who will talk about her masteral work entitled Alin Manglahi, Hans Menzi as a Filipino Citizen. Hello, Stephanie.
Hi, thanks for the invitation.
Before we focus on your study, can you tell us something about yourself?
Yes, sure. So I studied history at the ETH of Zurich. And I am now an archivist, and I am also a founding member of Zurich Colonial, who shows the colonial entanglements of the city in Zurich. So on our webpage, you can listen to stations in the city of Zurich.
All right. Well, speaking of colonization, the Spanish colonizers built their class system in the Philippines on pre-existing pre-colonial hierarchies, at the top of which they placed themselves. And not only were the indigenous population in the Philippines categorized as subordinate, but also so-called mestizos and Europeans residing and or born in the Philippines. This socio-racial hierarchical system continued to exist after the U.S. government took over. I understand that your study focused on this theme. Can you tell us a bit more about your study?
Yes, exactly. So my study is about whiteness, race, and identity in the Philippines. And I wanted to figure out how Hans Menzi, that was a Swiss man, how his role was within the class system in the Philippines you mentioned, where white people installed themselves on the top of this hierarchy. And his white origin gave him, of course, economic and social advantages in the Philippines rather than his Swiss nationality was important. And on the other hand, his skin color was an obstacle of being accepted as a Filipino citizen, especially after the Second World War, because the new imagined nation state in the Philippines consisted of a constructed homogeneous population where his white skin color contradicted his Filipino nationality. So, yes. And
so who is Hans Menzi, and what significant role did he play in the recent Philippine history?
So Hans Menzi was born by Swiss parents who migrated to the Philippines in the 1900s. And he was born in the Philippines while his parents were born here in Switzerland. And he also went partly to school in the Philippines. And after the First World War, he went to Europe, where he went to school and also to the military school in Switzerland, and came back to the Philippines. And in the Philippines, he decided to give up his Swiss nationality to be naturalized as Filipino. And then he lived in Manila and was there part of an international upper white class, and was an owner of many, many companies, like a zipper company. He had a lot of plantations in the southern Philippines. And in 1965, he even got to be first senior aide under Ferdinand Marcos. And Menti was also called Marcos's alter ego back then. And I found an article from the 1980s from Tagesanzeiger, where Hans Menti himself states that he back then proposed martial law to Ferdinand Marcos.
All right, thank you. We're going to have a short musical break before we continue.
Magbigay sa kapwa, magmahal ng kaos. Gusto kong tikman ng sarap ng buhay. Hawakan ang bukas sa aking mga kamay. Makita, makita, makita ang liwanag sa gitna ng dilem. Ayoko sa dilem, nandidilem ang paningin. Ang pangulong nasa, maibigay mo na sa akin. Mabuhay, magkulat, ang buhay ay ialay sa mga buhay na kinalay. Ang buhay natin di kayang halakin. Ipagtanggol lang karapatan natin. Katarungan, kabayabaan, karapatan ng tao, kaligasan, kabataan, Lenny Kiko. Sa buhay kong ito, ito ang gusto ko. Gusto ko lang sa pinatamis na panahon. Maniwalang mahigitan ko pa ang kahapon. Ayaw ko mawala na pag-asa. Gusto ko na masasayang alaala. Sama-sama, sari-sari, sabay-sabay-sabay. Sumasakay sa gulong ng buhay. Mapaitaas o mapailalim. Lahat pantay-pantay basta pinunoy di sa kem. Relax ka lang at huwag kumilos na madalos. Kumilos na maayos at tumiwas ka sa galos. Iisa lamang ang ating katauhan. Bigyang kahulugan ng katotoh.
Karangalan,
kalusugan, kabutihan, Lenny Kiko, kagitingan, kasipagan, kapatiran, Lenny Kiko.
Welcome back to Radio Pawikan. We are talking to Stephanie Willie on her master's thesis. So can you explain how the colonial class system in the Philippines worked?
Yeah, sure. So when Spain claimed the Philippines as their colony in the 16th century, the Spanish colonizers established a new ethnic class system. And this was based on the pre-existing pre-colonial hierarchy of Philippine society, except that the Spanish were placing themselves on the top of it, of course. And they ruled with the help of so-called native datus. Datus are translated chief. Who were appointed as village chiefs or local governors, and they collected taxes on the behalf of the Spanish district priests. And for about 300 years, this colonial society tea had been constructed and based on this racial divergence. It was characterized by three conditions, which was territorial nativity, mestizaje, which means blood mixture, and religious civilization. And with territorial nativity, it was meant that the so-called peninsulares, these were Spaniards born in Spain, they were like on the top of this hierarchy. But then there were also the so-called hijos de país. They were followed by the peninsulares, but they were Filipino Creoles who were of Spanish origin, but they were born in the colony. And they were discriminated because they were degenerates, because they came into contact with the Filipinos, the Filipino culture, but also with the tropical weather. So they acclimatized to the Philippines, which was seen by the peninsulares as something bad. Then the second condition, which I mentioned, was blood mixture. So Spanish mestizos descended from Spanish fathers and indigenous mothers benefited, thanks to their light skin, from economic and social privileges. But overall, they were still like not on the top of the hierarchy. So racial mixing between Spaniards and indigenous population allegedly produced mentally and physically inferior people, as they said. And then the third type of distinction for the categorization or classification of the population was inside and outside the Hispanic Catholic civilization. So the so-called infieles, who lived in the areas which were not yet conquered by Spain and belonged to animist religions, as well as the Moros, a Muslim minority in the southern of the Philippines, were counted among the uncivilized part of the population and therefore were at the bottom of this class system. And then there were also the Indios. They were already Catholicized, but and therefore were considered civilized, so to say. So as you see, whiteness provided structural advantages within this class system. And Hans Menzi, of course, profited out of it.
Yeah. Where was Hans Menzi in this categorization of classes?
So he belonged, of course, to the upper class, to the top of it, because he was white. After the U.S. took over, not only the Spanish were on top of it, but all the white people. So there was like this international white upper class, for example, in Manila, and they would meet in the Manila Polo Club, for example, and they all were economically involved. So they had companies, huge companies, and played a big part in the Philippine economy. And so it was not his Swiss nationality that gave him privileges, but more like his white skin color, because he could like live within this white upper class.
Mm-hmm. And what are the other, like other of the most important conclusions you gathered in your study?
So my conclusion I gathered is that being white in the Philippines back then and until now, obviously, gives you like social and economic advantages. For example, having a huge company or being involved in politics. And Hans Menzi, first of all, profited because he was white. But after he wanted to be Filipino, It was like a barrier for him because he was white, because you would see Filipinos as people from the Philippines and that were not Spaniards afterwards, after the Second World War, but Filipinos. And his white skin color would not suggest that he is Filipino. So it was like this split of identity which he had. So he didn't want to be Swiss, but he wanted to be Filipino. but he only became Filipino, but he wasn't like really Filipino.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And studying Menzi, you also got to examine the country under Marcos Sr. What is your take on the landslide victory of Marcos Jr.?
Mm-hmm. So I am not a historian. I am a historian, sorry. so this answer is going to be more of a personal opinion or more a historical view of it rather than a political analysis. First of all, I believe that the landslide victory was possible due to false information on or false information propaganda on social media, as in rewriting history in the favor of the Marcos family. And I kind of started to wonder why was rewriting history after only 40 years already possible, since a lot of Pinoys who experienced the Marcos dictatorship are still alive. And I guess this is mainly because from the beginning on, the Marcos family and their cronies already tried to alter Philippine history in their favor. And there's like a really good example, like a lot of people only blame Imelda Marcos for the failures of Ferdinand Marcos because of her greed. So you always hear like the story that she has had a lot of shoes and she corrupted Ferdinand Marcos. And I think that's like where it actually all started. It's just not only that it was like because of social media and just because of the rewriting of history just now, but it already started in the 1980s. So I guess the question is who writes history? And as you know, historiography has played and plays an important role in the constructed image of a nation. And of course, always winners write history. And you also see that in the Philippines, like after Philippines wasn't a colony anymore, there were mainly US American historians who wrote Philippine history. And that was the same after Spain left the Philippines. It was Spanish historians who wrote the history about the Philippines. So yeah, it's history is like written by winners.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and Switzerland was also party to Marcos's ill-gotten wealth. Why do you think this is still an unsettled issue?
Yeah, it was settled really late. So only in the 1986 did the Federal Council here in Switzerland or was able to award major reputational emergency legislation, that the millions of Marcos's of Marcos here in the on the Swiss bank accounts were not given back to him. And it took like 17 years until Switzerland even returned the $678 million to the Philippines, and that was like. After that, after they gave back the money, it took even more years of negotiation and court decisions in both countries, the Philippines and Switzerland, to decide how the Philippines could use the money. And I think in 2016 or 2014, it was decided that 2/3 will be used for land reforms and the last third will be used to compensate victims of the regime of Ferdinand Marcos. And I think in 2016, they were still discussing of paying the victims money. So you see, it took like over 30 years just to give back the money to the country.
So a lot of the victims may not have gotten their money until now. And now that he has been elected, I suppose that'll continue. All right. Before we continue, let's pause for another song. I forgot to say the song we listened to earlier was Mga Kababayan Ko by Francis Magalona. And now we'll be listening to Rocky Rivera with Brown Babies.
I'm a brown skin lady with a brown skin baby, and I'll keep making more. I'll keep making more. I'm a brown skin lady with a brown skin baby, and I'll keep making more. I'll keep making more. I'm a brown skin lady with a brown skin baby, and I'll keep making more. I'll keep making more. I'm a brown skin lady with a brown skin baby, and I'll keep making more. I'll keep making more. Brown is the color of my hair. Brown is the color of my lover boy stare. Color like a truffle with the hazelnut cream. Brown skin baby with the light skin dream. I was once told brown wasn't pretty for a lady. Had a parasol ever since I was a baby. Mama, she would tell me stop playing in the sun, but I love to play rough and that wasn't no fun. My family from a region where the Spanish occupied, so my people light skinned over there, here's why. They mingle with the women, it was more like rape, so I got that Andalusia in my blood anyway. My cousins hella brown and they treat me real nice, cause they bronze and I'm 24 karat gold light. Philippine, Polynesian, Indonesian trace, but we all sailed in from Africa anyway. That's why you could travel all the way to my home, see a bunch of natives on the side of the road, sipping on that brown fire water in their palms. Just another loss of a brown skin god. I'll keep making more. I'll keep making more. I'ma keep making more. I'll keep making more. I'ma keep making more. I'll keep making more. I'ma keep making more. I'll keep making more. If brown is wrong, I don't wanna be right. Jesus Christ, amen. I don't wanna be white. But every hero to the story, why they gotta be white? Think it's time everybody stop being polite. Only speaking on facts. It's all over the news. Another brown man dead over motherfucking shoes. Laughing to the bank while we murder our own. It's another form of brown population control. Open your eyes and maybe you find that we worship the sun since the beginning of time. And while these white girls tan and these black girls bleach, all my brown girls darker than a paper bag preach. To the melanin deficient, jealous how we live in, passing on the hate to our children. Stay blessed when your girl come around with the fist up. Revolution gotta stay brown. I'm a brown skin lady with a brown skin baby, and I'll keep making more. I'll keep making more. I'm a brown skin lady with a brown skin baby, and I'll keep making more. I'll keep making more. I'm a brown skin lady with a brown skin baby, and I'll keep making more. I'll keep making more. I'm a brown skin lady with a brown skin baby, and I'll keep making more. I'll keep making more. I'll keep making more. I'll keep making more. I'm a keep making more. I'll keep making more. I'm a keep making more. I'll keep making more. I'm a keep making more. I'll keep making more.
My name is Lily. Thanks for tuning in to Radio Pawikan, 1 hour of Philippine radio where we find out about Filipino culture and everything in between and what that means. Thanks for tuning in to 97.5 MHz. This is Radio Laura. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Radio Pawikan on 97.5 Radio Laura. We are speaking to Stephanie Willi about her master's thesis. So before the break, you said Menzi was the first senior aide of Marcos Sr. Can you tell us a bit more about their relationship?
Yes, of course. So you have to know from the very beginning on, Hans Menzi was an active supporter of the future president, or back then future president Ferdinand Marcos. And after World War II, Menzi supported him financially, generously in his political career. And maybe I have to mention, it was a very funny story, you could say, how they met each other. So Hans Menzi was a guerrilla fighter during the Second World War for the Philippines. And he got...
Hukbalahap?
Yeah, exactly, but not communist. He was fighting for the U.S. Guerrilla forces. Mm-hmm. And he got imprisoned by the Japanese police in 1945. And they sent him to Fort Santiago, which is a prison in Manila, which is very famous now because it's a museum. Anyways, in his biography, Hans Menzi mentions that he met Ferdinand Marcos in Fort Santiago. And also, like, Ferdinand Marcos also really often mentions how he was imprisoned back then in Fort Santiago. So you do see the both were connected through Fort Santiago. Anyways, Ferdinand Marcos offered him in 1965 even an advisory position, which Hans Menzi turned down because he would have to give up his companies and interests because of this the anti-graft law back then. And he was